The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, represented by CBS News Radio. It's a pleasure to continue a conversation with my colleague, Jerry Hendricks, the author, Jerry Hendricks, of To Provide and Maintain a Navy, Why Naval Primacy is America's First Best Strategy, asking the question, what Navy do we need? Or as Jerry puts it very plainly, what is the correct mix? Jerry, how would you characterize the mix of the U.S. Navy today at under 300 ships? What is its mission, and can it adequately supply what is needed in this changing world?
Thank you, John, and great questions once again. So the Navy has two essential roles that it has to do on a day-to-day basis. And in one of those missions or roles is unique to the U.S. Navy, which is the requirement to provide a persistent naval presence around the world. No other force, the Air Force, the Army, has a requirement to be persistently forward deployed in order to uphold American interests. And this approach isn't unique to the United States in history. The British did this, the Romans did this, where they would use their navies to uphold their interests. But for right now, the United States is sort of the ruling cop on the beat in the world on the idea of upholding rules and norms. And so we need a fairly substantial Navy in order to be persistently out there. In fact, we need about 150 ships to be at sea on any given day in order to satisfy all of the president's requests and requirements that have been identified by our regional combatant commanders. And by that, I mean things like the Supreme Allied Commander in Europe or the Indo-Pacific combatant commander that's out in Honolulu, or the Southcom commander that's down in Miami. These people identify places that they need U.S. Navy ships to sail in order to demonstrate American interest and resolve. And so if you add all those things up, it comes up to be between 130 and 150 ships on any given day. Unfortunately, we only have about 297 ships today, which means that we would either have to have over half of our fleet at sea in every given moment, or we have to compromise and sort of cut back. And in order to keep our fleet in good maintenance and our crews trained, we've begun to compromise and cut back on those persistent forward deployments. That has created these power vacuums around the world, which is, you know, places like the South China Sea or in the Arctic, where the U.S. has very little presence up there, and the Russians and the Chinese have sought to fill those vacuums. So, what type of Navy? So that's the president's mission.
Let me explicate a little more, because I'm learning from you, Jerry. Yeah. The Navy, as I understand it, amateur reader here, is built around its supercarriers: 10 Nimitz class supercarriers and one new Ford class supercarrier. It is supported by ships called cruisers, Ticonderoga class, yep, and perhaps also destroyers, Arleigh Burke class, and submarines, attack submarines. All of that is in support. That describes the Navy we have today. And if I read the news correctly, it's exhausted. It can't be everywhere at once, especially because it has demands in the Gulf, demands in the Western Pacific, as we've identified. And then there also is something you've taught me, that the Russians are increasingly sophisticated about sorting their submarines out of the northern seas into the Atlantic. All those demands upon the Navy. And your analysis is that the Navy is always changing. It never stands still. It needs more ships, but it needs a new mix of ships. Now, before we go to the new mix, what is the mission of the supercarrier today, those 10 Nimitz-class carriers and their air wings? How are they challenged by the present geopolitical contest?
Okay, and so that goes to the second major mission of the Navy. So I mentioned there's two missions. One's provide day-to-day presence to sort of preserve the peace. The second mission, major mission of the Navy, is the win-the-war capability of the fleet, the ability that if an enemy chooses to go into war with the United States, that we have the capability and capacity to win that war decisively and hopefully quickly. And so the U.S. Navy is focused on its supercarrier fleet for most of the last 70 years to be the central part of that win-the-war part of the fleet structure. We also depend upon our submarines, which are also very lethal and very decisive in warfare. And so when you start looking at this question of the mix, you need to have a good balance between that day-to-day preserve the peace force, which I generally ascribe that to frigates and other small craft to provide presence at a lower cost, with a balance with your high-end warfighting capability, which I tend to ascribe that to our carriers and their escorts within the carrier strike groups, as well as our submarines, our fast attack submarines, and our guided missile submarines. And so we've gotten out of balance because, one, we've become very top-heavy. We have a lot of war-winning capability within the fleet. We do have 11 supercarriers in the fleet today. We have 22 cruisers. We have nearly 90 Arleigh Burke-class destroyers. But we have very little capacity in terms of frigates or small surface combatants to do that day-to-day presence. And so as we look towards the future, what is the mix we want to build? We want to get that balance back by, growing the number of frigates in our fleet. But at the same time, we need to make some deep investments in a new large surface combatant to escort our carriers because our Ticonderoga-class cruiser is about to retire. But we also need to make some investments in some new things. Recently, large unmanned surface vessels, these unmanned platforms that can be out there without any men on them but still carry tremendous capabilities in terms of sensors or weapons that can work in cooperation with manned ships, those are areas where we need to make some significant investments going forward, because that allows us to grow the fleet, perhaps at a lower cost, because the unmanned platforms will not cost as much as a manned platform, but also create a platform that we can send into very dangerous settings that perhaps we don't want to send a manned platform. So this is all about trying to find the right mix or balance of our future fleet structure.
How does Moneyball, the wonderful baseball book about getting players that can get on bases, how does that inform the challenge for the U.S. Navy?
Well, John, I had to include that into the book because I found it so intriguing. I read that book, and of course, much as you, I love baseball, grew up watching baseball, grew up watching the big red machine of the Cincinnati Reds in the 1970s. And so one of the things that, the Moneyball book suggests is that getting on base is the most important thing or metric to really study. It's not the home run hitter. It's the guy who can get on base, either through a single, a walk, or getting hit by a pitch, because getting on base provides the potential to score. And if he's followed by another player who can also get on base and hence move him over, then you're going to be able to ultimately generate runs. So what is that balance between the base hitter who can get on and perhaps steal and the big home run hitter that you're going to put in the number three or number four, a hole in the batting order? That's the thing that I took away from this. We need to have the number of small surface combatants, the frigates, the base hitters, in our lineup, but you also need to have that home run hitter there that's also part of the balance. I just found the Moneyball analogy to be so useful because it made me think of the Navy in a different way, and I hope that as I explained it within the book, that it would cause the reader, perhaps a reader who's not familiar with the Navy, to kind of come to grips with the idea of presence, which in many ways is nebulous. But if you think of presence as the guy getting on base, then perhaps that becomes something that you can understand.
The frigates, you've mentioned them several times, Jerry, and we'll build frigates. We've got a new contract to the FREM, which stands for, not obviously, Frigate European Multi-Mission. You describe this FREM as a pickup truck as opposed to a weapon system. What does that mean, Jerry, for the fleet?
Well, I think it was time after some of the ships that we've had that had setbacks. They were technical failures. The Zumwalt class is still struggling. The Ford class aircraft carrier is still struggling because of the number of technologies that were incorporated into their designs and that have not fully matured. And so I looked at the Frem as saying, this is a really basic utility ship that I can put new sensors or new weapons on fairly easily, or take them off fairly easily as the design matures over its 25 to 30 year life. The Frem that gets commissioned in a few years as the new Constellation class frigate will not look like the Constellation, the USS Constellation would look at the end of her life 30 years hence. You would be able to put new radars on her, perhaps new sensors, undersea sonars, and new missiles that design would change over life. So think of it more as your utility pickup truck. You know, when I go to the woods of Maine, you know, with my truck, you know, I go up there, maybe I take my chainsaw today, maybe I have to take another tool with me tomorrow, but I depend on what is the mission that I have today that tells me what I'm going to put in the back end of that truck before I go either into the woods or in my ship as I go out to sea.
The Arleigh Burke-class destroyer, we're building new frigates, I understand, and they're like a toolkit that you can call upon, like a Swiss Army knife. But the Arleigh Burke destroyers, I've come to understand as battleships. We have 21 of them you identify that need to be updated. Is that a wise investment, Jerry, to update things that are about the Cold War?
Well, the one thing about it is, so you have the 21, what we call the Flight 1 Arleigh Burkes. They were the first 21 ships of that design that were built. And they're coming up that we're going to have to make a decision that we either retire them and send them to the breakers or use them as targets in some of our exercises, or we're going to have to make a significant investment to upgrade them. The first 21 Arleigh Burkes did not come, for instance, with a helo hangar. It was a mistake, which is why we built the next flight of the Arleigh Burkes that included a helicopter hangar on them. But these first 21 ships, if we took them in and invested in refurbishing their hulls, strengthening their keels and their ribs, perhaps upgrading their power plant system, and then integrating perhaps a new missile like the new conventional prompt strike hypersonic missile so that this ship could bring a new capability to the fight, then those ships could have a new lease on life, and I may be able to use them for another 10 to 15 years rather than just scrap them now and send them away. Refurbishing them will cost us some money, but it would cost us less money than to build a new ship, you know, from the keel up. And so this is one of the things that I suggest as a means of getting to a larger fleet more quickly. And I think the quickness is an important aspect of this conversation, John. We do not have 20 years to prepare for the Chinese threat. Admiral Davidson, the commander of the Indo-Pacific Command, recently came back and said that he believed that we may have a fight over Taiwan within the next 6 years. And so the threat of China at sea is proximate and real, and it's something that we have to begin dealing with now.
Jerry, I don't want to speak against an admiral, but I think 6 years might be generous, Jerry. Generous. I can tighten that timeline given the rhetoric that's coming out of the Western Pacific. Captain Jerry Hendricks. United States Navy aviator retired. The new book is to provide and maintain a Navy. Why naval primacy is America's first best strategy. When we come back, what will that day look like? How will our adversaries conduct themselves with their new capabilities? What can the U.S. Navy do about it? I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.